Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What a hit. Don't punt. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And we welcome you into Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us for Tuesday's edition. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. If you can't get to the phones, you can certainly interact with us on social media using hashtag GiantsChat. She's Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Absolutely. We're all pumped. We're all ready to get your feedback on all topics related to the New York Giants. Jenny Vrentis from Sports Illustrated, Monday Morning Quarterback, will be joining us at the bottom of the hour to discuss what's going on at the owners' meetings. There's a number of discussions with respect to potential rule changes, instant replay, the expansion of the postseason as well. And John Mara, co-owner of the New York Giants, Anita, he spoke with the media over the last few days, and he seemed to indicate that it's unlikely they're going to make a change to the postseason structure, at least for this season. There has been dialogue, but at this point, it looks to be a little bit premature.
Yeah, and what I did just for some fun, I went online and I looked at the seeding. I'll share this with you. So I looked at the seeding last year in regard to the teams that made it to the playoffs. So hypothetically speaking, if, of course, two more teams would be added, Philadelphia and San Francisco would have made it from the NFC. Houston and Kansas City would have made it from the AFC. And so there would be three wild card games as opposed to two. Pittsburgh would have played Kansas City. Indianapolis would have played Houston. Cincinnati would have played Baltimore. In the NFC, Dallas would have played San Francisco. Carolina would have played Philadelphia, and Arizona would have played Detroit. Both Seattle and Green Bay in the NFC still obviously would get the bye, and New England and Denver in the AFC would get the bye. But listen, I'm all about football. Like, I'm probably one of the few that I want to see an 18-week season, two preseason games, more regular season games, more playoff football. I'm a football junkie. So, like, you know, for this to happen, I'm stoked and excited. I'd be excited about those matchups too.
Well, there's always those borderline teams every year that are just on the peripheral in terms of whether or not they're going to make the postseason. If you remember, the Giants a few years ago won 10 games and missed out on the playoffs. So there's a number of teams every year where they're at that 9-win, 10-win barometer. Even the Patriots one year, they won 11 games with Matt Castle when Tom Brady went down, and they also missed out. So I don't think you'd be stretching it, Anita, where you're forcing in teams that don't warrant a postseason spot.
Also, pretty interesting, typically in years past, right, the NFC has been more competitive in those final week 16, week 17 games to see who wins and who's in. This past year, it was the AFC. The AFC had so many teams that was, you know, and so many, you couldn't keep up in regard to, okay, well, wait a minute, if this team wins and this team loses, if this team, you know, so the AFC this year was more competitive in that kind of bottom range area of teams trying to make it to the playoffs, more so than the NFC. We'll see what happens this year.
And it alternates year to year, as you just alluded to. I mean, Houston, Kansas City, San Diego, and Buffalo, all 9-7 win teams, and even Miami was 8-8. So, you know, the ball bounces their way a game or two. Obviously, the playoff picture certainly changes dramatically. In addition to that, there is a lot of discussion with respect to extra points perhaps being changed. And the other thing that at least was changed, the Calvin Johnson rule, the whole thing with respect to Dez Bryant.
But his catch non-catch still would not have
correct
counted.
Exactly. The wording has been altered. So the wording now is it's not a move common to the game. It's a fact that you have to establish yourself
as a runner.
Correct. After
right
you get the football.
So explain the difference. You want to give us a visual?
I don't know if necessarily there is much of a difference, because you could still argue that there is still somewhat of a gray area, because people are going to say, well, what does it mean now to be a runner? Does that mean that you've caught the football, you take a few steps? I think people are still going to find an issue with it. I think there's just a little bit more clarity, because when I say to you, make a move common to the game,
make an athletic move,
yeah,
compared to be a runner.
Be a runner, where there's at least some definitiveness to
so
that statement.
All right, so let's define it here on Big Blue Kickoff.
Well, good luck with that.
So for you, in your opinion, how many steps does a player have to take to establish himself as a runner with the football?
Well, I would say that you have to first secure the football. That's number one. I mean, if you're bobbling it around, you may establish yourself as a runner, but you don't have security of the football. So, I mean, you have to take at least 2 to 3 steps to me to be a runner. But remember, this only applies to when a receiver is in the act of going down, similar to Dez Bryant. Because a lot of people are also bringing up, well, what happens if a safety comes over the top and knocks the wide receiver out? You know, that's a little different. There have been rules that are established with respect to that. This is just confined to... ball is up in the air, receiver goes up, he's in the act of coming down, similar to Dez Bryant. What exactly does he have to do before he goes to the ground? And then if the ball were to come out, how would you then differentiate that? That's what I think it really comes down to.
Well, let me ask you this. Going back to that Dez Bryant catch, when you saw it, did you think it was a catch or did you not think it was a catch? Well, what side of the coin did you sit on?
After applying the rules, I didn't think it was a catch, but I thought there was a gray area in terms of move common to the game where after he makes the catch, now this is the luxury of slow motion replay, when you watch him get the ball, there are a number of steps that are taken as then he goes down. So that's why they need to clarify move common to the game. And I think they did that to a significant degree.
I feel if he would not have lost the ball the second time before he caught it, if the ball came loose, I think if that would not have happened, I think they would have caught I think they would have called it a catch. I think the fact that he lost it and then, you know what I mean?
You're talking about lost it as he went down?
Right.
I mean, there was a slight bobble. I didn't see as much.
But what I'm saying. I think the bobble over-dramatized.
Oh, of course. Because you put it under the magnifying glass.
Yeah. So, but it's, you know, listen, it's one of the most, I think, amusing areas of professional football is how you there's a rule in place, but everybody determines it differently. And there's always you could have a room, you could be watching a football game with 10 people and a play will happen, a penalty will be called, they'll replay, it'll go slow-mo, and still people in the room will be 5 on one side, 5 on the other. No, it's a bad call, it's a great call, what are you talking
opinions.
About
absolutely
yeah.
Well, I mean that's what makes the game fun and convoluted at the
same kinda
time.
It's kind of like is it a white gold or is it a blue black? You know what I mean? What was it for you? It was a blue black for me. The dress.
I've never – oh, the whole dress thing? To be honest with you, I haven't looked at the dress yet, so I still don't understand the whole debate over it. That was one of the things
guy,
that I stayed away from.
This guy.
It wasn't relevant to my neck of the woods.
It was what was trending.
It was trending. There was a lot of other stuff trending at the time. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. Obviously, the Giants made a number of free agent moves last week, so if you want to weigh in on that towards the latter part of the week, Kenrick Ellis brought in from the Jets to help stop the run in addition to the defensive tackle spot. And then a few days later, adding George Selvey from the Dallas Cowboys, who is known for both being a pass rusher as well as stopping the run. That's one element of Selvey's game I don't think gets enough credit, how good he was against the run, especially when you look how Dallas performed throughout the course of the last two seasons. With that being said, since we have Jenny Varentis coming up at the bottom of the hour, we want to try to squeeze in as many calls as possible before then, and obviously we'll take more of your phone calls after the interview as well.
Okay. I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say chicken wings are offered for lunch today here at the Giants facility. Is that right? No? Because it's... Right? I feel like I'm in a sports bar right now.
Well, that may be because somebody in the vicinity of us is munching and fitting in a little snack in between work hours.
Is it something buffalo buffalo chicken?
Ugh. You were in the right area.
Okay.
You were in the right area.
All right. We got 50 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you know, don't make us too hungry here, Anita. We got to get through the program here. It's 12:11 only.
I'm hungry now.
All right. Let's check in on the phone callers. And to get us going here on this Tuesday, Steve is on Staten Island. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, Lance. How are you, Anita? How you doing, huh?
All right, welcome,
doing well,
welcome.
Steve. What's on your mind?
All right. Hey, Lance, listen, you know, real quick, I just want to get to that catch that you were talking about. You know what? Initially, when I saw it, yeah, in the beginning, I kind of thought it was a catch, too. But then after the beauty of instant replay, I'm so glad that it was ruled a non-catch, and it couldn't have made my day any better knowing the Cowboys went home crying because I just can't stand that theme. But that's another story for another time. Listen, on this Kenrick Ellis thing, you know what? I got to tell you, I think it was a good move. I have to be honest. I like that signing because, you know, he's going to strike me as that kind of a player that's quiet but does his job, if you understand what I'm saying. He's not going to shake any radar numbers. I don't think he's going to be that kind of a dominant pass rusher. But I like what I see. And, you know, knowing the core group of guys that he's going to be around, I think he's going to feed off them. And I tell you, I think the Kendrick Ellis signing was a really, really good signing. And another sleeper was George Selvey, because, you know, we've been waiting for years, and Giants fans will tell you, for a legit returner, man. And that's your guy right there. So I like the moves. I like what I see. And real quick, one question I want to hang up and hear your answer. Now that one of the heart and soul of the leadership, Antoine Roll, is gone, who do you see stepping up and taking his place? Again, I'm curious to hear who you guys think are going to fill his shoes, because I think those are going to be really big shoes to fill. And thanks for taking my call, guys. You guys are great. Keep doing a good job.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you for watching. I'll answer the leadership role. Hands down, John Beeson.
Yeah.
John Beeson is just such a stud. He's so well-respected in that locker room. He's so well-respected with his coaching staff. And I think that's my opinion. I think it's a big reason why they brought him back. Fingers crossed. Hopefully he can stay healthy. But such a great leader, and I'm really excited to see the relationship develop between him and Spags, and what kind of role he's going to play in this defense. But hands down, John Beeson will be the leader in that locker room.
And I think to a certain degree, Beeson has already established himself as a vocal leader, even with Antro role already here. So I don't think it's going to be an issue in terms of the transition. He demands the respect of his teammates, and he's earned the respect of his teammates.
And another thing, he gained that almost instantaneously when he walked into that locker room. It wasn't like something that just had to develop over time. And I think a big reason, too, was, you know, him and Antoine Roll, they both played at the University of Miami together. Roll, at that point in time, was a big leader in the locker room. So the transition, it was kind of like a 1-2 punch between them. Because Roll was here, he was just immediately accepted, and he felt comfortable stepping into that role. So that was what was really, for me, that was something that was really, really interesting to me, Beeson's first year here, because, I mean, he just walked in that locker room and he just immediately gelled, which I think is so cool.
Well, I think it also says a lot about his reputation around the league. I know he's been plagued by injuries dating back to his days with the Carolina Panthers, but when you bring up Beeson, whether it be in media circles or NFL circles, that's a player that is a poster child for what an NFL player is supposed to be all about. One other guy that I'll throw out, Anita, with respect to somebody who I think has a great deal of respect within the locker room and has that vocal presence, also at the linebacker position, Jameel McClain, who's a veteran who came up from the Baltimore Ravens. You know, he's another player that I think can assume that void left behind by Antoine Roll. Between Beeson and McClain, I think the Giants have a nice 1-2 punch there, a nice mix. Specifically, they commonly both play that linebacker position.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I kind of got that sense, especially as the season progressed towards the end of the season. Beeson had a pretty loud, I don't want to say loud mouth, it doesn't sound positive, but like a loud presence in the locker room, and I think really respected. So a lot of it comes down to respect. You know what I mean? You've got a lot of people kind of dig on Eli because he's not so charismatic, and they compare him to Peyton Manning. But Eli has a ton of respect in the locker room because on game day, he brings it. He's here early. He watches films. Players know how committed he is. He's here late. Winning is important to him. So, you know, leadership comes in a lot of different ways, not just, being that cheerleader. One thing, and I've said this before, I covered the Miami Dolphins for 10 years, covered the Baltimore Ravens for 4. I'm entering my 6th year covering the Giants, and I've never been around a better locker room. And I mean year in and year out. I wasn't here when Shockey was here. From what I understand, it was very different then. But I've never been around such a great, great, very positive. I'm all about energy and a lot of positive energy, a lot of positive vibes, no cancers. It really is a good vibe in there.
Well, and that, once again, speaks volumes not just of the leadership here, but it also speaks volumes of Tom Coughlin. And that's something that John Mara brought up in his end-of-season press conference, the fact that, you know, when you look at Tom Coughlin, the guys respond to him. Mm-hmm. And that's an asset that is extremely valuable when you look at a head coach.
Did you see the so again, all the owners are in Phoenix, Arizona right now. And, of course, the head coaches are there with their owners as well. And so there was a photograph taken. Have you seen it?
I have not seen that.
There was a photograph taken of all 32 head coaches.
Which they do annually.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you've got Andy Reid on, like, front, sitting down to the left, and he's wearing Bermuda shorts and a Tommy Bahama kind of, like,
Hawaiian
shirt.
Feel.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you've got Tom's in the front. He's sitting down, of course, representing Big Blue, and he's got his Giants shirt on. And then you've got Bill Belichick, who's sitting there with sandals on.
I'm trying to bring it up online.
There we go.
As you describe it, to see if we can
Tom is dead center.
Dead center. He's right there.
Repping the Giants.
Jack Del Rio is right to his left.
Yeah, but see, you've got Bill Belichick was ripped for his sandals. And look, Andy Reid looks, you're in Arizona, man. You're not in Hawaii. Andy Reid.
He's one of two guys to break this down that's actually wearing shorts in the front row, if you notice. One guy there and one guy there. Outside of that, everybody. And it really is. It's an eclectic group of clothing, Anita, if we are to play the fashion police here.
A lot of blue.
Yes, you do. Which is not a bad color.
A lot of blue. But I like
from the Giants' perspective.
Tom Coughlin, front and center, man. I love it.
There you go. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Marco is in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Lance and Anita, how are you today?
Doing well, Marco. What's on your mind?
Just a thought about the safety position, and then I had a question. I was thinking about the safety position, and I'm not as concerned. I think there's a plan here. And I think, you know, early on, though, for the Giants to target Devin McCourty right out of free agency, I think that pretty much tells us that, A, they were, you know, that's a need at a position, and or B, they really valued McCourty. But everything really became interesting after McCourty signed back with New England, because I think that tells what was available on the market is really telling about, you know, how the Giants felt about the rest of the safety players there. And for them not to be in on, or, you know, we don't know, but for them not to sign any players up until now at safety, you know, I'm just interested to see how this is going to shape out. Where there's two players at the position on the roster right now. So, I mean, you're either going to – someone's going to change a position if everything stays intact, which I don't think it will. I also don't think that they're going to draft a safety at the number 9 pick. So – listen, I'm interested to see how it shapes out. I think Jerry Reese has done this in the past, where the media and fans have you know, kind of been on a position in the off season and thought that there's a big need there, and then when the season kicks off, you know, everyone should rest easily.
Not to cut you off, and I'll let you continue. The perfect example is last season, and I brought this up on a previous show. We had this conversation at this time last year about the tight end spot.
Sure.
Everybody was concerned. Eric Ebron. Larry Dinnell, meanwhile, is on the roster, and he takes advantage of his opportunity. Now, they had a little bit more depth on the roster at tight end compared to the numbers that you just touched on with respect to safety, but you still have the draft, and free agency is still left, as well as perhaps some undrafted rookies who are always brought in during the course of training camp.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Lance. And I also thought back to when Steve Smith a while back signed with the Philadelphia Eagles and Victor Cruz filled in. So now here's my question, though. And I'm interested in what you guys think about this, if I could stay on the line. The Giants, to me, are a team that have always made smart contract decisions. I'm having a hard time understanding how they justify the contract that was given to Dwayne Harris. You know, Beckham is there. Cruz is there. Cruz is under a pretty nice contract. Reuben Randle is still on the team. Dwayne Harris, I'm happy he's on the team. I think he's going to help. And even if the Giants go off and say that he was under, he wasn't utilized in the way that they think they could use him here, he'll help on special teams, on all special teams. But that was a pretty nice contract that he got. What do you guys think about that?
Well, in terms of finances, the Giants never publicly release any of the numbers, and I understand that you as a fan may have seen some of the reports and so forth. To answer your question, Marco, you know, you alluded to it and you hit it right on the nose. He's not just a return guy. He's not just a punt returner. He's not just a kickoff returner. He's also a gunner. And Zach Bowman is a free agent. So if Zach Bowman doesn't return, you need somebody to fill that spot. Dwayne Harris fills in there. Four different players were return men last season. Odell Beckham was one of them. This now enables you to keep Odell Beckham primarily as a wide receiver. So Dwayne Harris is going to come in, and he's going to be a legitimate contributor. This is not a player that's going to be a compliment. This is not a player that's going to come off the bench. You're talking about an every down player on special teams. Those are valuable assets.
Let me ask you, I'm sorry, really quick. Let me ask you this. How do you, Lance? How do you think he's going to be utilized in the wide receiving core? Do you think we will see him just strictly special teams? Do you think he'll be able to compete for, like, maybe that fourth spot?
I absolutely think he'll be able to compete for that fourth spot. If you look at how Dallas utilized him, I mean, keep in mind, you had Dez Bryant, you had Cole Beasley, you had Terrence Williams, you had Jason Witten. There were a number of options in the offense. Does that mean he's going to be a highly targeted wide receiver? I don't know. I mean, we really have to see how OTAs and training camp play out, but he'll have a legitimate chance to go in and compete for that fourth spot. You also have Kevin Ogletree. You also have Marcus Harris. You need the numbers to foster competition. That's never a bad thing. You got anything else, Marco? All right, we may have lost Marco here, but appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. And it's a valid question. Dwayne Harris, if you look at his resume, you know, as we just discussed, has not been utilized as an every down wide receiver during his stint with the Dallas Cowboys. But, right. You know, Anita, there's three facets to football. There's offense, there's defense, and there's special teams. And teams can win and lose games on special teams. Mm-hmm. When you have that dynamic player, that sometimes is the difference between losing and winning a few games.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times, if you go back and you look at stats, teams that have done well, their field position, their starting field position, is so crucial. I mean, you know, so many times when you have a team that can start from like the 35 or the 40-yard line, you're almost cutting your ability to either score a touchdown or put up 3 points in half. And so, you know, I think it is. I think it is. I think it's so crucial, so crucial. And I'm excited to see what this guy can do, because ever since I've been here, again, I'm going on my sixth year, ever since I've been here, it's always been kind of that issue in regard to special teams. When is special teams going to get better? When is special teams going to contribute? What's going on with special teams? And another thing is Odell Beckham Jr., I don't want to see him on special teams.
Well, that's what Dwayne Harris does. Yeah.
Exactly. So I like the move. I like it a lot.
Well, and think about the other players that were used as return men last season. You had Michael Cox a little bit when he made the roster. You had Quinton Demps. Demps is a free agent. Zach Bowman, I mentioned, was a gunner. He's a free agent, too. And then you're left with, essentially, Odell Beckham. So from a numbers game, you know, Dwayne Harris fills two needs in terms of a person who could start and also provide depth. So when you evaluate that, and then on top of that, the fact that he could also go out and run routes as a wide receiver, I mean, I think there is a lot of stock and substance that you could put in to what Dwayne Harris can certainly bring to the table. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, as you can continue to chime in on the conversation via social media if you can't get to the phones. And let's check out some of the comments that we're getting up here on Twitter. I know a number of people speculating on that number 9 pick and where the Giants should go in terms of that selection. Also, a number of people weighing in on some of the rule changes here. Let's see here. We've got Donald saying the new catch rule is as clear as mud. Dez made the catch, cradled the ball, then moved towards the goal line, fumbled over. And that was the breakdown as to why they did not rule it a catch. Yeah, there's a number of details into what it means to make a move common to the game, as well as the process. And you always hear that term. It's a process to complete the catch. So Donald certainly on Twitter at Tag Rocket, that would be a better way to say it, chiming in on the conversation. Ben Gruen, it grew in Ben on some other rule changes. 18 games would be cool, but would ruin the record books forever. All single season records would go down within 3 seasons. Well, if you're talking about 18 games, obviously the extension of the playoffs. They're not talking about the extension of the regular season at this point. But, I mean, that's a fair question. Do you think it would change the conversation with respect to the record books? I mean, maybe in the postseason for, I guess, those teams or players who have additional games.
I think you have to make that relevant in regard to, because you hear, oh, you know, this player has this stat win
over a certain period of games.
When the league changed, when the league became X, you're going to have that. You're going to have to preface by saying, you know, right?
No, I agree. Yeah. You have to have, my philosophy when it comes to football, you know, when you play the game of let's compare quarterbacks and running backs, I think you also need to take into consideration the style of play. For example, you know, back in the day, maybe about a decade or two ago, the running game was a prolific staple of the NFL game. Now it's more of a pass-happy game. So is it fair to compare quarterbacks who flourished in the late 80s, early 90s to guys now who sometimes have about 35 to 40 pass attempts a game when 10, 15 years ago they were maybe only averaging about 25?
So just to make myself clear here, for example, let's say Dez Bryant comes out and has like, 1,800 receiving yards and 25 touchdowns next year. I know it seems absurd, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Hypothetical.
So if that was to go in the record books, the next to it would say, the year that the NFL went to an 17-game schedule.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? So you'd have to dictate that, I think, in the record books moving forward. I don't agree.
Well, I mean, I think that's a simple solution. Yeah. Also, if for the nature of a conversation, for example, if you and I were playing the game of comparison, I think it'd be important to say, well, this receiver had X amount of receptions and touchdowns in the span of 4 games. This receiver did it with 5 or 6 games. I mean, it's important to see the body of work as opposed to just the statistical numbers. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. We'll certainly continue to try to get to more of your phone calls over the course of the program. We will keep you posted. Having some technical issues right now, so as soon as things get back up and running, we will let you know. In the meantime, if you are on social media, we advise you, let us know your thoughts on whether it be New York Giants topics as well as rule changes. Because we're breaking down a number of different things, whether it be with respect to the potential changes to the postseason, rules, a lot of different things being discussed right now at the owners' meetings in Arizona.
All right, so I'm going to go down the list of some of the rule changes out there, okay? Allow any calls to be challenged. Allow penalties to be challenged. Allow coaches to challenge personal fouls. Guarantee both teams a possession in overtime. How do you I like that.
I like that, too.
I like that.
I would agree with you.
Right?
I think it's natural. Look at what Major League Baseball does. If it goes to the 10th inning, Anita, don't both teams have an opportunity in the top and the bottom of the 10th?
Yeah, absolutely.
College football, I don't see why the NFL can't adopt that.
So, again, right now, just to clarify, if a team wins the toss and scores a touchdown, game over. The opposite team doesn't have a chance to score a touchdown. Now, if they kick a field goal, then yes, the other team has an opportunity to either kick a field goal, tie up the game, or they score a touchdown, then they win. So, yes, even if a team scores a touchdown on their first possession of overtime, then, yes, I do believe that the other team should have an opportunity to try to match that.
And when it comes to football, not just the NFL, there's 3 facets to a team. You have defense, special teams, and offense, and you win with all 3 and you lose with all 3. So it's only natural for overtime you have an opportunity to showcase all 3 of those facets.
Let me ask you this. What do you like better? Do you like the way that college football does overtime, where they put them on a certain yard line heading into?
Well, I mean, I think it's a crafty way of doing it, and it makes it perhaps a little bit more exciting. But I'm okay with the NFL making you go the length of the field. I don't think they need to change it to that degree, Anita. But I would agree with you. I think it would be nice to have each team have a legitimate shot to get into the end zone. Yeah. Just because
I like the way that college football does it. And it does. I mean, it does give – the only thing I don't like is how – what is it? How they – when they switch over, the defense has to stay on the field for 2 series as opposed to it's not – right? It's not
– Well, there are specific rules in terms of the length of the field and how far away from the end zone. But, you know, I mean, I think in the NFL, if you have a good defense, why not be able to showcase the ability to stop them going the length of the field? I think you're dealing with professional defenses in the NFL that I don't think they need to add any bells or whistles to the setup.
And here's one more that I want to share with you, and that's if an eligible player reports as an ineligible receiver to the referee, he must align within the tackle box. Now, keep in mind, I think this is what's being requested because of what the Patriots did in the playoffs against the Ravens, and then again, they tried to do it against the Seattle Seahawks.
They're trying to clarify once again. Same thing with the Dez Bryant. Clarification is an important theme this offseason.
So an eligible player reports as an ineligible receiver to the referee, he must align within the tackle box. So they're trying to get that.
So he can't go out on his own island and pretend that he's in a different game.
Like what the Patriots did with Shane Vereen. That's what they did with him, right?
Well, that's what the Ravens were complaining about. Mm-hmm. They were saying that they were being very creative in terms of how they utilize players. But, you know, this rule gets back to communication, Anita, and I think they want to make sure that every player reports to the official, and then the official, upon his duty, makes it clear to both teams, this receiver is ineligible, this receiver is eligible. It's a more of a communication issue than necessarily moving guys to the right or the left, because the NFL game is very complex, and there are so many different formations. I don't think they want to take that creativity away from teams. They just want to make sure you as a defender, you as an offensive player, you understand who you're lining up against and what is kosher and what is not when it comes to at least breaking down the X's and O's.
I believe we have our guest on.
Sounds good to me.
Let's bring her on. Her name is Jenny Vrentis. You can find her at SI.com. She's under the Monday Morning Quarterback umbrella with Peter King, which is pretty fantastic. Also, she covered the Jets for many years, and she also covered the New York Football Giants for several years as well. Let's bring in Jenny Vrentis. Jenny, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Fantastic. You're on with Anita Marks. Obviously, you know me and Lance Meadow here at we're coming to you live from the Giants facility. It's Big Blue Kickoff Live, of course, is a show for the fans. They call in, and we wanted to get you on to talk about, obviously, this week, big deal with the owners' meetings and all that's going on there. I guess, what do you feel is the biggest storyline coming out of Arizona right now?
Well, there's certainly, you know, a lot of different things that they're addressing there. You know, I think one thing that hasn't been talked about a ton, but I think will be really important health and safety-wise, is there's a proposal to allow the athletic trainer spotter to call a medical timeout. So if you have a situation with Julian Edelman, you know, late in the Super Bowl where he looks like he may have sustained some kind of head injury and they're in a no-huddle offense and he can't come off the field, now the athletic trainer high in the sky can kind of stop the game and get the player off the field and have him checked for a concussion. So I think that's, you know, really important because obviously we're talking about health and safety. A week ago, Chris Borland retired, you know, ways to make the game safer, ways to protect players more. I think that's a significant development, although it's, you know, maybe small. It might seem like a small thing, but I think that's one really important thing they're talking about this week.
Jenny, Rich McKay, one of the co-chairs of the NFL Competition Committee, yesterday had a press conference, and he went over about a trillion different extra point proposals that have been laid out by various teams, and they're obviously going to have ongoing discussions this week. From what you're hearing, is there anything specific that may be in the driver's seat that will at least be adopted for the preseason so that they'll try to experiment something new with respect to extra points this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, this year, like you said, we'll probably only see a change in the preseason unless something drastic happens, but they often use those exhibition games to experiment with things. You know, I kind of like the idea of putting it on the one-yard line, so that's the one proposal that I kind of liked, but, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, when they adopted the two-point conversion originally, that was considered radical. So I think that they're talking about a lot of different options. I know the Colts have a proposal that's kind of out there a little bit. So I guess really anything's possible because, you know, they're kind of brainstorming ways to make the play more exciting. That's long been something that they're kind of worried about because the extra points are kind of automatic. But I don't know. I kind of like the idea of, you know, you have a chance to make it, you know, put it on the one-yard line so teams can go in for two. I like that idea.
Again, Jenny Vrentis joining us. You can log on to SI.com, Monday Morning Quarterback, find her there, and, of course, read all her work. Jenny, this is a rule change that I think is interesting that's being discussed. If an eligible player reports as an ineligible receiver to the referee, he must align within the tackle box. And I would imagine that this is a rule that's being questioned here because of what Bill Belichick and the Patriots were able to do against the Ravens and tried to do against the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl. It seems to me that Bill Belichick is front and center when it comes to a lot of these rules in the NFL. Does he have a bigger say than other head coaches? And how do you think this rule is going to pan out?
Well, yeah, I think the reason it seems like a lot of rules come up in relation to things that he's done are because he kind of pushes the envelope. So I think what they did was pretty brilliant this year. You know, in the playoffs, they saw a rule, they took advantage of it. They used it to benefit their team. Obviously, it makes sense now that teams on the receiving end of it say, let's evaluate the rule. Are there ways to make it more fair? I'm not so sure that will come to pass. I mean, if you force the player who reports is eligible to line up inside the tackle box, that kind of restricts, you know, the formations that you can use. And I feel like that really kind of changes what you can do with where players line up on the field. I'm not so sure that teams are necessarily going to go for it. Maybe it's just a little bit more emphasis on it. And to understand what is a reasonable time to allow the defense to have time to adjust. Maybe there are certain stipulations for how you announce things and how much time you give the defense to respond. I think maybe rather than a rule change, you often see times where there's a different emphasis placed. We saw that on the on what's a catch. There's a little slightly different emphasis place, right? You know, you have to establish yourself as a runner, but the rule itself isn't changing. I think we could see something similar to this where you would place a different emphasis on the rule, but you might not change it completely.
So Lance and I were trying to really think about, how do you establish yourself as a runner? I'm going to throw the question back your way, Jenny. What do you need to see from a receiver that's going to make you say, okay, he just did it. He just established himself as a runner. Is it one step? Is it two steps? What is it?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that this clears up the confusion. I agree with you guys. I think it's a little bit, it's extremely vague. I don't know that it helps that much. I mean, a football move, now we have establishing themselves as a runner. These are all very vague definitions. I guess the idea is you have the ball to your chest and you're prepared to take a step, or if someone is coming your way, a defender, you can kind of guard yourself against the defender. But I think it's just as nebulous as making a football move, to be honest.
Well, I certainly would agree with you, Jenny. I think there's still that big gray area, even though they did tweak a word here or there. And speaking of that play, that Dez Bryant non-catch against the Packers, in addition to another Cowboys playoff game, the debate over whether or not they should expand the use of instant replay has been brought to the forefront this offseason. And that is another thing that obviously will be evaluated this week. What do you think will happen? Do you anticipate a number of changes that will open up the door for them to utilize instant replay, or is it really just a matter of chatter right now?
Yeah, you know, I think you always have to strike the right balance there. You want to make sure you get calls correct, but you also don't want to extend the length of the game and make everything reviewable. I wouldn't be surprised if they expanded the terms of where instant replay can be used a little bit, but, you know, I think keeping the games moving is a big priority as well.
Jenny Vrintas joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jenny, I want to switch gears here for a minute because the Giants went out. They brought in Kenrick Ellis. I know he was with the Jets for several years. You covered the Jets for many years, and while he was a member of the Jets. So if you can kind of fill in some of our listeners out there, what can they expect from him as an athlete, a player, and now a Giant?
Yeah, he's definitely your run-stopping defensive tackle, you know, kind of clog space up front. You know, I guess you've seen guys like that before on the Giants, maybe Fred Robbins or Sean Rogers more recently. So someone you can use on first and second downs. And I think, you know, that's a good signing for the Giants because obviously, you know, stopping the run has been something that, you know, the team struggled with in recent years. And he's just kind of your big guy up front who kind of really, you know, clogs up the space there and can help with that, with stopping the run.
In terms of what he could bring to potentially the pass rush, Jenny, is that a facet of his game? I know he dealt with some injuries during his tenure with the Jets, but in terms of pushing the pile forward, because, you know, the Giants certainly have gotten a lot of pressure out of Jonathan Hankins last season, do you see that as an area that he could potentially thrive?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely mostly a first and second down player, but, you know, he was used in a lot of different ways. You know, Rex Ryan's defense with the Jets, they mix their fronts a lot. I've certainly seen him push the pocket. I've certainly seen him, you know, contribute to the pressure. And, you know, they move guys around a lot up front. I know Steve Spagnuolo likes to move guys around a lot up front to kind of put them in different spots that may be surprising to the opposing offense. So I'm sure he could contribute there. I think he's mostly a first and second down player, though.
Jenny, before we let you go, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. I guess the biggest news that came out of the weekend is Adrian Peterson's agent came out and said that he just doesn't want to play for the Minnesota Vikings anymore. So now there's a lot of speculation where he's going to land. You and I, we talked about when I came back from Arizona for the Super Bowl, the talk down there is that he would land up with the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously in the NFC East, an opponent the Giants would face twice, maybe if both teams make it to the playoffs, maybe three times in 2016. Is that, what are you hearing? What are your sources telling you? Do you have a finger on the pulse of where Adrian Peterson might land up? Could he possibly become a Cowboy? Could he end up in Arizona with the Cardinals? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to hear an agent kind of come out on the record and that strongly say that, you know, his client doesn't want to keep playing for the Vikings. Obviously, the Vikings want him to keep playing for them, and they, if he doesn't want to, they want to make sure that they get the proper compensation in return. I think the longer it goes on, it makes it harder for there to be some kind of trade. I think that the Cowboys have been, you know, long rumored for a good fit. I think there's certainly mutual interest, but, you know, after signing Greg Hardy, they would have a tough time, I think, fitting Peterson under the salary cap. So, you know, I think in Minnesota, they're certainly hoping that, you know, they've made overtures to kind of repair the relationship between the sides to get Adrian excited about coming back to Minnesota. I don't think that possibility is completely extinguished. I think his agent is, you know, wanting his client to have every option available to him, and making a statement like that basically is welcoming any suitors to come calling and say, let's hear your offers, let's see if you can get somewhere else better. But I don't know. I kind of think he'll still be in Minnesota next season.
Jenny Vrentis from SI.com, Monday Morning Quarterback. Jenny, really appreciate the insights. Thanks so much for the time.
Great job. Thank you, Jenny.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. So Jenny weighing in on a number of different topics out of the owners' meetings.
Pretty cool. One of my favorite stories that Jenny Vrentis did for Monday Morning Quarterback was when Stevie Brown had his ACL reconstructed. She actually sat in on the surgery.
Wow.
And wrote about it. And she wasn't sure. She said she took some Dramamine. She wasn't sure.
She could handle it herself.
She'd be able to, like, stomach it because she was actually in the operating room when it took place. But it really is. It's a really, really interesting story with Dr. Andrews. So if you have an opportunity, Google Jenny Vrentis, SI, Stevie Brown, knee surgery. It's really good. Really good story.
And Stevie Brown, speaking of him, is a free agent. We had some questions earlier in the program about the safety spot, and that is certainly a position to watch as the offseason progresses, given that the Giants right now relying on two young players on the roster, and Nat Burhey and Cooper Taylor. We're going to reopen up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. So if you have a question, you have a comment about New York Giants issues, in addition to rule changes and a lot of the discussion taking place at the owners' meetings, feel free to weigh in. I know we're getting a number of tweets in on a lot of these different topics, so let's continue to monitor Twitter. A number of people weighing in terms of the rule changes, as well as potentially what should be implemented for the sake of playoffs and so forth. Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben, I think the proposed seeding rule in the playoffs makes sense. No reason the Panthers should have hosted the Arizona Cardinals, and that's another facet of the whole postseason discussion, Anita, that if you win the division, let's say, but you have a losing record or a record which is lower than a wild card, should you be able to then give up your hosting duties and have the wild card team host? Now, I'm on the fence on that because I think you need to give a team that wins the division some incentive. Then there's no point to having divisions. So if you take away the ability for the team that wins the division to host, what's the incentive of winning the division? Yes, I understand you're making the playoffs, but I think you need to add that incentive in. So I'm not necessarily in favor of them changing that up.
Look, last year in the NFC, Philadelphia and San Francisco did not make it to the playoffs. I think you could sit here, and Philadelphia's record was 10-6. San Francisco's record was 8-8. I think you could sit here, and I think you can make a great argument that both those teams, head and shoulders, were a lot better than Carolina.
Well, from a record standpoint, yeah.
Who got in as the fourth seed with a 7-8-1 record. I mean, that division was just horrible. I actually thought Atlanta would come on strong down the stretch, but obviously they did not. But, you know, I think there's an argument there. I mean, are you honestly taking the best six teams into the postseason? I think you can argue not.
Well, but it gets back to the division structure is what the NFL is founded on in terms of the scheduling.
No,
you know, we play opposite divisions. So if you take away, if you just want to go with the hypothetical of let's just take the six best teams, my argument would be then what do you need the divisions for? What are you going to reward the division winners?
I'm not disagreeing. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is I like the fact that hopefully, fingers crossed, it's not going to happen in 2015. Hopefully 2016, they increase the playoffs to two more teams. Because again, I truly believe now, again, hypothetically speaking, let's say last year, you had the three wild card teams on the three wild card games on wild card weekend. Like I said, Dallas would have played San Francisco, Carolina would have played Philadelphia, right? So now you really have a true test, right? Now you really have a true test, because I do feel that Philadelphia was a better team than Carolina last year. Now who's going to win that wild card weekend game? So I like the idea. Now, that situation did not happen in the AFC. You know, New England, Denver, Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Baltimore. Do you feel that Houston or Kansas City was better than any of those six teams? No. I couldn't argue that.
Houston's defense, I'd make the argument, was better than some of the teams you named. But as a balanced whole team, I wouldn't necessarily go that far.
So I think the AFC got it right with just six playoff teams moving into the postseason. But I think the NFC got it wrong. And I don't know how you get it right, because I'm with you. I think you need those divisions where the winner of that division immediately gets a playoff berth. But that's why I am all about extending the playoffs to more teams.
And the other angle to this, and we are going to get to your phone calls momentarily here. I know we have a number of people on the line, so just hold steady. The other angle with respect to this postseason debate, Anita, the one thing I do like about the current NFL structure, unlike the NBA and the NHL, where nearly half the teams make the playoffs, it's difficult to make the postseason in the NFL. It is very difficult. And that's another reason why there's so many turnarounds and turnovers from one season to another in terms of the number of teams, because it's not easy to build a dynasty. That's why I'm not necessarily a big fan of saying, let's throw a bunch of other teams into the mix. I like the fact that it's so difficult to make the postseason. It enhances the importance of the regular season. If you add more teams to the postseason, you're taking away from the importance of the regular season. So I think there's also that facet of the conversation as well. 201-939-4513.
I don't know. I don't know. Lance, it's there's so much parity. That's what makes the NFL so great. There's so much parity that it's still competitive. You mentioned, look, in Houston, Kansas City, I want to say San Diego, Pittsburgh made it. But there were a lot of teams that week 17, it was a playoff week in the NFL.
Well, which also helps the regular season.
So
it doesn't take away from that.
So I don't think it'd be watered down. I think it would be great if you were to extend the ability for two more teams to make it to the postseason.
Let's head back to the phone lines and we check in with John in Manasquan. John, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Anita, how are you?
Doing well, John. What's on your mind?
Just curious. I know that the company line with the Giants in the draft is we always draft value. You know, we don't worry about need and this and that. But since they really last week picked up some good defensive players, do you think that they'll lean more towards picking up a couple of offensive linemen now in the draft?
Well, I think it really depends on the value of the offensive lineman when they get to number 9. If they think there's an offensive lineman that's out there that's worthy of the number 9 pick, I can certainly see the Giants going in that direction. One player that we've discussed on this program, and if you read some of the mock drafts, is Brandon Scherff out of Iowa, who's playing the tackle spot. I know we had a question on Twitter related to that. He could potentially move over to guard too, depending on how teams utilize him in the NFL. I mean, at 9, I don't think it's a stretch to take a player like that. It really depends on the offensive lineman and whether or not that is the best value when the Giants get ready to select.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And safety, you think they'll be looking for safety in the draft as well?
I would say if a first-round safety goes, it's going to be much later than number 9. If you look at last year, Landon Collins certainly is the first guy up on the depth chart.
But I don't think he's at 9.
Correct. I'd be very surprised, John, to answer your question, if he would go that high. All you need to do is look at last year. Calvin Pryor to the Jets and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix to the Packers. We're talking about 18 and later. So, that's usually the barometer of when a safety is taken. You could argue that the Giants could add some depth at that position. I'd be surprised if it happens with the 9th overall pick.
Yeah. I think, in my opinion, one of the most important things is that in the draft is they get 3 or 4 players that can step in immediately and play.
And I think that's the goal every single draft, John. You always want the players that you select early in the rounds. I mean, look at what Odell Beckham did in year number 1. I mean, in an ideal world, you want every first-round pick to produce like he is, where he could come in, he could be a legitimate starter, and his production could be reflected in the standings. So that's been the goal for the Giants each and every year. And if you look at last year's draft, John, it wasn't just Beckham. I think from top to bottom, a lot of those rookies made contributions in year number 1, and that doesn't necessarily happen every year, not just with respect to the Giants. I'd say across the league. How many years are you going to get a fifth-round pick like Devon Kennard come in and take advantage of his opportunities? That doesn't happen every year.
All right, that's a good point. Well, I appreciate the time, guys.
Not a problem, John. Thanks so much for weighing in. Appreciate that. And Brandon Scherff, who John was alluding to, or at least the offensive line position, SNF Mikey at Mikey Angel TV asks, is Scherff a guard or a tackle? And hypothetically, let's say he's a guard, is it absurd to take him at number 9? I guess that gets into the debate. Do you grab only tackles with the top 10 pick? Could you go in the direction of a guard? I think he's a versatile offensive lineman, so I think you could really move him around, just like Justin Pugh, who probably has the ability to play guard as well as tackle if they decided to move him around, and he was clearly an early first-round pick.
Right. I mean, this is something we talk about a lot, and it's interesting because it's a question that's posed a lot, and I guess because we're getting closer to the draft, why not? The 9 pick to me is very, very intriguing. Because I do believe, my opinion is that there are going to be better, talented, skilled position players on the board for the Giants to pick, more so than need. I don't believe there's a top 10 safety in this draft to pick. I don't believe that there's a once you get past, who's the Williams that a lot of people are anticipating Tennessee to take with the number 2?
Leonard Williams.
Yes. Yeah. So Leonard Williams, to me, other than that, is there another line, offense or defensive lineman that you feel is top 10? I don't think so.
Well, I think the quarterback is certainly going to influence how high some of these defensive linemen go, depending if Mariota, if somebody trades up. But Leonard Williams is here, and then I think there's a little bit of a drop off because the rest of the players that you're alluding to, Anita, they're more of the tweeners. The linebacker / defensive end type of player.
So I guess what I'm saying here is that there are, you know, in looking again, and I'm not a scout, I'm not an expert, but in all the research that I'm doing and in looking at all the mock drafts that are out there, the players that are going in the top 10, I think the ones that the Giants would love to get their hands on are going to go early, and then what's going to be left are players that don't necessarily meet the needs of the team, but are a top 10 player. So it's great having that 9 pick, but I think it's going to be difficult. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens because you don't want to reach for a player. You don't want to pass up on a player who potentially could be a top 5 and he's still available at 9. He might not meet your needs, but well, you can't. He's just too good that you can't pass up on him. So that's what I love about the draft, and I'm really, really excited for it. And I'm really excited to see what Jerry and the guys are going to do.
Well, having many options is never a bad thing. That's always a good thing. And the player that comes to mind using your hypothetical, Danny Shelton, the defensive tackle out of Washington, who I probably put in that conversation with Leonard Williams. I know I had mentioned everybody else.
See, a lot of experts, the mock drafts have him further down, like around 15, 16.
Well, he hasn't had a great deal of experience in terms of college football where he's been a highly ranked player. That's why I think there's always risk connected to that. This was his breakout campaign. He's coming off his year where he put his name to the forefront and said, I'm a lottery pick. I am a legitimate guy. Previously, notable player, but not necessarily getting the type of attraction and media coverage that he would be at this point.
Very interesting article that came out and by Jason LaConfora from CBSSports.com, and he said that Tennessee wants to give Zach Mettenberger another shot. So they're sitting at 2, and they have a lot of needs that they need to fill. Well, apparently, in this article that Jason LaConfora wrote, he's proposing that now, because Philip Rivers has come out and has no interest in a long-term deal with the San Diego Chargers, wants to kind of leave San Diego, wants to new surroundings. He probably has a good 5 to 7 years left on his deal. That possibly the San Diego Chargers, I want to say with the 17th pick, if I remember correctly, would trade Philip Rivers and their 17th pick in exchange for Tennessee. Tennessee then would gain Philip Rivers and move down to 17. San Diego would move up to 2 and take Mariota. Interesting. I think there's speculation out there that this whole Sam Bradford thing with the Philadelphia Eagles and Chip Kelly, that he brought him in because there's so many teams that want Sam Bradford, that this is a trading Maybe that's something Chip Kelly does with Sam Bradford, offers Sam Bradford to the Tennessee Titans in exchange for their number one picks, and he moves up and gets Marcus Mariota. You know, you never know, and I think that's what's going to be so exciting about that first night. And everybody's just absolutely done in that Bucks are going to take Jameis Winston. Lovie Smith came out at these owner meetings and kind of alluded to, hey, listen, we'll listen to some trade offers. You know, there's another report out there that the NFL I'm trying to think who Jason Cole from Bleacher Report came out and said that the NFL is not going to force Jameis Winston to attend the draft. That there's been so much negative publicity in regard to Hardy and Peterson and Ray Rice that they're expecting some protesters at the draft. If I'm the Tampa Bay Bucks, Lance, aren't you kind of second questioning like whether or not you want this guy to be the face of your franchise?
Wouldn't be the first player with drama surrounding him, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but with the number one pick overall, I mean, that's a big risk. So I'm sharing all these stories that are coming out because I just think it's leading up to draft night.
Which happens every year.
And we don't know what's going to happen. I think that's what makes it so exciting.
And that's why what you were alluding to is the quarterback situation. The whole Winston-Mariota dynamic is going to probably help the Giants out, which is a good thing. Because if you're a Giants fan, you want the two quarterbacks to go in those first nine picks. Because that means that you have more linemen, more linebackers, more wide receivers, more running backs, and so forth, who are going to fall into your neck of the woods. So that's a good thing. As you mentioned, all those other teams, they could have debates throughout the night for months about the quarterback situation. The Giants, we know, they're not worried about that, but they'll look at some of those other positions. So if Mariota and Winston go early, I'd say that's a big benefit for the Giants. Yeah. That'll help them out tremendously. We do apologize for some of the technical difficulties that we had on the phones earlier, but we still have a few more minutes left of the program. If you want to give us a ring, certainly an opportunity for you to chime in at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. In the meantime, you guys and gals doing a great job on Twitter, continuing the conversation, asking a number of good questions related to the draft, Giants players, and so forth. So let's continue to monitor that as I take a look at the reaction with respect to the ninth overall pick and so forth. Let's take a look at some of the recent tweets here. Shane at ShaneCFC24, trade at nine goes down a few spaces. So meaning to trade at nine, I should say, the Giants go down a few spaces, take Landon Collins at safety, gain a couple of more picks in the draft. And, you know, Anita, that's also been a big popular topic of discussion. Is this the type of draft, if you're the Giants, where, you know, you're at number nine and you could get certainly a big playmaker, but you say at the same time, maybe we go down, we add some more insurance with other draft picks, and on top of that, grab a decent player later in the first round?
Let me ask you this, and I don't mean to put you on the hot seat. I don't know, but...
But you enjoy doing that anyway. You don't mind, but you enjoy doing it.
I do. and that is, if you... Let's say somebody down at, like, 20 or no, I'm just thinking, if you trade with somebody, do you switch their first round, but do you immediately assume Giants get another second?
I don't think you can assume that. I mean, it could be a third round. It could be even a player too. I mean, let's not forget about that. Players get moved with draft picks. I think you could see a number of combinations playing out. I would agree with you. I don't think you can assume if you move down, you're guaranteed the number one
another
pick
second,
from that round and a second,
second
round. It could be a pick the next year. It could be a third or a fourth rounder.
I guess my question is, because of where the Giants are in the top 10. They're at nine. You know, if somebody's going to trade up that high, can we assume that whatever it is, Giants get another two?
Well,
because of where they're at.
I think a good comparison is the Bills and the Browns made a trade last year. Now, it was a little bit higher than where the Giants are, but if we can maybe bring up, I don't know the exact details of that trade. It was the Sammy Watkins deal, but we could look at what Cleveland got in return, because I know Buffalo's without a first-round pick this year. I just don't remember the exact contents of the trade. Let's take a look here. Okay, the Buffalo Bills traded the number nine overall pick.
Okay.
So they were exactly where the Giants are, as well as the first and fourth round picks in 2015. So they had to give up their nine, the first rounder from this year, and the fourth rounder from this year. They gave it to Cleveland. Cleveland in return No, Cleveland got all of that, excuse me. I should word it. Cleveland got that.
Right.
Buffalo just moved up to the fourth to get Sammy Watkins.
Right.
So you're talking about a team moving up to the nine.
But I guess here's where we bring this question to a close, and that is where was Cleveland? Where was
Cleveland was at the fourth spot. That's where Cleveland was. Cleveland was at the four.
Okay.
They gave Buffalo the four in return, got two first rounders essentially. One in 2014, one this year, and a fourth rounder.
Got it.
But we're talking about the difference between a four and a nine. So if you're the Giants, if you're a nine and you go to, you go to 18, does that change the parameters? Do you gain more? Do you gain less?
Because
it's not necessarily as high up.
There is a value system.
Of course. There is absolutely a value system. Yeah.
It's
whether or not
really
we're going to sit here and break it down for you is another story.
I know.
But there is a value system.
There is a value system in how this all operates. One day, I'll master it.
Real quickly, let's get one more caller in. AJ is in South Carolina. AJ, you're closing up shop for us today. What's happening?
Good afternoon, Lance, Anita. I got a question about the draft. I think the Giants should draft offensive line with that night pick. Left guard spot.
Well, I think a lot depends, AJ, and appreciate the phone call on, do the Giants move some personnel around this offseason? Jeff Schwartz comes back. We know Jeff Schwartz could play left guard. He could play right guard. He could play right tackle. Where do you put him in? That then perhaps moves people around. Do you keep Justin Pugh at right tackle? Do you move him around? Weston Richburg, we're under the assumption he's going from guard to center because obviously J.D. Walton is no longer a member of the team. I think that's going to alter what direction perhaps you go in the draft if you choose to take an offensive lineman at number nine.
And another thing is we could sit here and just based on physical skill, ability, and strength, put together our starting five, okay? But a lot of times that might not be the best formula for an offensive line. A lot of times offensive lines come together later on the season, and it's a mix of five guys who aren't necessarily the guys that you would think would be the starting five. There's a very interesting dynamic, I think, that is created when you talk about offensive linemen. And
you need that to develop in the offseason.
There's chemistry. There's so much that goes into it. So, you just don't know. I think we won't really know. I think we can have an idea of who our starting five is going to be, our starting five is going to be. But I don't think you really know until midway through training camp.
And that's why I think, if anything, it's a benefit if you choose to go in the direction of an offensive lineman at number nine. Perhaps you want a guy who you think can transition to another position in case you need to move them because they can't play the position that they did during the course of their junior or senior year at college. We want to thank everybody for chiming in via the phones, via Twitter. Once again, apologize for some of the technical issues earlier in the program. Big Blue Kickoff.
They're all your fault, Lance.
Yes, all my fault. Just bring all the tweets and the complaints my way. I will take the brunt of it. Absolutely. We're getting the phone technicians 24/7 around the clock. They're going to make sure that everything will be up and running and about come tomorrow's program. And that brings me to Big Blue Kickoff Live being on each and every afternoon at noon Eastern. Before we close, just want to remind you the second round of the Giants Bracket Challenge is up right now. You can go online to giants.com/NYG bracket. You can vote on all of the four second round matchups. So certainly you still have time to do that. We'll be back on tomorrow for a new edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What are we getting on punt?